The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and are we proud, is Jesse McKinley, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Welcome back, Jesse, and thanks for the honor. So appreciate it.
Of course, Alan. Thanks.
So there's an awful lot going on statewide. Donald Trump has sucked a lot of the air out of the room. Do you feel sometimes that we in state politics, who study state politics, aren't getting the kind of attention we need?
Well, you know, it's an off year. 2019 was never expected to be a big political year in New York. Obviously, the gubernatorial election was last year. And I think there was a lot of attention, obviously, between the primary of Andrew Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon, as well as, you know, the Democrats trying to take over control of the state Senate. That was a big story for us. So it was not unanticipated that 2019 would be a little bit of a lull. And I think nationwide, as well as here in New York, everyone's basically holding their breath for 2020, which is going to be an enormous year, not only because of the presidential election, but because the U.S. Senate may well be in play. The impeachment proceedings will likely heat up. There's going to be the House of Representatives races, which will probably be closely fought, in which the Republicans will be trying to regain the majority there. So I'm actually happy to take a breath this year and get ready for next. So there it goes.
Now, there are those of us who believe that Jay Jacobs, the Democratic chair, is really, you know, a digit on the hand of Andrew Cuomo. I ask that question not to be unkind, but there does seem to be a little potential dissonance between the two of them. Andrew, if I may call him that, is claiming that he's really for letting people run on more than one ticket, while Jacobs, on a commission set up by Cuomo and others, is saying, no, we don't want people to be able to do that. What's the truth?
Well, I think the messaging on this has been a little bit muddled. I mean, obviously, Jay Jacobs has been outspoken about not liking fusion voting, whereby candidates can run on multiple lines and collect votes in multiple lines. And the governor has been relatively mute on this. During a press gaggle on Tuesday, on Election Day, I actually asked the governor, I said, so where do you stand on this? And he gave a curious answer, as you point out, where he said, oh, well, I support it. Well, actually, I've done this, and so I support it. And that answer kind of surprised, I think, the press corps and myself personally, because it certainly didn't seem like he had supported it by putting Mr. Jacobs on this public finance commission. So there is some question as to what the governor is doing here. Now, keep in mind what he may be doing is kind of hedging his bets, you know, whereby he offers up a somewhat milquetoast support for fusion voting. And then if, in fact, the Public Financing Commission does away with it, then he can say, well, you know, I supported it, but, you know, this was out of my hands. You know, the Public Finance Commission, it was an independent commission stocked with some of my best friends, but an independent commission that got rid of this practice, which, of course, I supported. So, you know, this is one of these three-dimensional chess games where Cuomo seems to be trying to give himself a little bit of cover in the event that fusion voting is mort.
Mort, the French for death.
Indeed.
Oui, oui. So, Jesse, doesn't Cuomo in the age of Trump basically say, I'm going to pull some of the same garbage that we see Trump doing? Doesn't he undermine his own credibility when he does something like this?
Well, I think the comparisons between Cuomo and Trump are simultaneously valid and somewhat a stretch. You know, I think that there is a tendency on behalf of both these politicians to sometimes, to stretch the truth, or at least to bend the truth to the current political moment. Cuomo, you know, periodically says things during stump speeches as well as during press gaggles that kind of leave the reporting corps, and I suspect some of the electorate, scratching their heads. The president certainly is known for encouraging the same sort of behavior. Now, keep in mind, however, these guys are politically very much diametrically opposed. I mean, say what you will about Andrew Cuomo, but no one's accusing him of attacking abortion rights. No one's accusing him of trying to, stop immigrants at the border. No one's accusing him of caging young people, in detention facilities. You know, Cuomo, despite his detractors on the left, is considered, a solid centrist Democrat who oftentimes gets policy done, like minimum wage or paid family leave or a number of other accomplishments, which are solid liberal touchstones. But in style, there is some connective tissue there. You know, they are both the sons of powerful men. They both were born and bred in Queens, or at least bred in Queens. And they both have somewhat of an abrasive political style. So I think there is some connective tissue there, though I wouldn't overstate it.
Not that long ago, Andrew Cuomo came on the air with me, hasn't been on since that time, and made what some people think was a mistake, some people think was purposeful, and used the N-word in full. And it made international headlines.
As you're wont to do, Alan.
Yeah, oh yes, I'm that kind of guy. So it made international headlines, and there was a certain amount of consternation. There was nothing coming out of the Cuomo camp. As I say, Cuomo hasn't reappeared on our air since that time. I have this eerie feeling that maybe I'm getting blamed for what he said, even though he said on my program. So anyway, with that said, was it a mistake?
Well, I think, once again, context is everything here. I think the governor was trying to quote something that had been published in our pages, I believe by Brent Staples, who is our Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the op-ed page, who I was proud to work with when I was a Ute.
A youth.
many moons ago. But Brent had written about the evolution of the Italian American stereotypes, and in quoting that article, the governor used the N-word on your air. The question became whether or not that word should ever be spoken aloud, whether or not it should certainly be spoken on public radio. And I think there were a number of detractors. But, in the governor's defense, he was quoting from an article in The New York Times and trying to make a point. Whether or not he made that point artfully or not, I think is open for debate. But it was not his word per se. It was a quote. So there it goes.
He is a brilliant tactician. They could have fought back. All they did is, as Mrs. Zwick told me in junior high school at Joan of Arc, shut talk keep shut. So he kept shut about it, and basically the whole thing went away. It was a brilliant execution, don't you think?
Well, I think that there's times when you're a press person for any political figure where it's sometimes best just not to say anything for fear of making things worse. And certainly there have been times during the Cuomo administration where in trying to explain an action or trying to explain an inconsistency or try to, say that he didn't mean what he said, he actually made things worse. So I think in this case, they probably just, kept their powder dry and that probably served them well. It is interesting, however, in covering the Cuomo administration for now 6 years, I think, that they often do not ever admit fault. And this is something that is kind of openly giggled about amongst the press corps, where, you would be hard-pressed to find an example of Governor Cuomo ever saying he was sorry and or that he was wrong. I think the sole example that we could come up with in a quick conversation was when Joe Prococo was convicted of federal corruption charges, and the governor kind of grudgingly said, well, that did happen under my watch. But this is not an administration that readily admits error and or fault about anything, so...
You think, look, there's a lot of talk now that the Democrats are floundering, that they are not coming up with a candidate who can beat Donald Trump. There are those who believe that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are too far left and will alienate a lot of potential voters. And there are those who believe And the polls are still showing this, that Joe Biden is a more moderate guy. We saw a Kentucky election as we speak, in which the more moderate Democrat won. And then there are those, I know this is a long disquisition, Jesse, and I'm interviewing you, but there is, there are those who think Andrew Cuomo could come in still if the moment arose. What do you think?
Okay, well, I think there's a lot to unpack there, but let me start with two words, and I'll say this: the Washington Nationals. Now, for those of you who watch baseball, you'll note that the Washington Nationals became World Series champions last week. But the Washington Nationals were also a terrible baseball team very early in the year, and were written off by a lot of people. I make this point to basically say we are a year away from a presidential election, in a presidency, an administration in which gigantic bombshell news happens pretty much every 12 hours. So I think that there's a lot of race to be run in the course of the next year. I think no one really knows what could happen with impeachment, what could happen with, you know, a million other issues. So trying to handicap it from a year out is a fool's errand. I don't think anyone knows the way the winds are going to be blowing in a year. I think earlier this week, the New York Times, my publication, put out a poll that I think surprised a lot of people, which showed that Donald Trump, who is underwater nationally in every single poll you could possibly look at, is incredibly competitive in six critical states, which could flip the presidency one way or another. And I think that surprised and upset a lot of Democrats. But I think the polling was right. You know, this guy could very well lose the popular vote by even a greater margin than he did in 2016 and still be reelected president. So that is one scenario. Now, as for Andrew Cuomo's political fortunes, I think it's getting late early, to strain another metaphor. I think that was Yogi Berra who said it was getting late early. But anyhow, to continue, I think for Andrew Cuomo, I mean, to get into a presidential race a year out without fundraising, without political operations on the ground in places like Iowa and New Hampshire, without anyone really clamoring for Andrew Cuomo to get into what is already a crowded Democratic field, I think that is exceedingly unlikely. I mean, you and I have discussed that he could well be eligible for a cabinet position if a Democrat were elected in 2020. But once again, that is a long way away. So we shall see what we shall see.
You know, as a student of Mario Cuomo, I interviewed him, as you know, for a lot of years, and of Andrew Cuomo, I notice from a psychological perspective that Andrew Cuomo adheres to his father's legacy. Now he's living in the mansion where his father lived full time. There are those who think that, unlike Mario, he's waiting for lightning to strike, and that there is a possibility that it could come around. I always thought with Mario it was a false expectation, but with Andrew I'm not so sure. I think things with Trump are so bad with so many people that they could go to a moderate like Andrew.
I think everyone is entitled to their opinion.
As you say, a fool's errand, and I don't want to be the fool.
Sure. I mean, once again, anything could happen in the course of the next 12 months. And to be sure, I think Andrew Cuomo's political skills are undeniable, and I think that there is space in his party for moderates. But I think right now the energy in that party seems to be coming kind of full bore out of the left. I think that would explain to a large extent why Elizabeth Warren has seemingly caught fire. Sure. I think, strangely enough, the candidacy of Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete from South Bend, has been a curious development. You know, there's a young man who very few people had ever heard of a year ago, who has basically crept up and is basically the fourth runner right now, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you've got 17 candidates, you're right in the middle of the you're right at the front of the pack. So, I could see a scenario where a young candidate such as Mayor Pete could catch fire or could become a vice presidential candidate keep in mind, 3 months ago, everyone was talking about Kamala Harris out of California being the most popular choice. And right now her campaign seems to be very much on the ropes. She pulled out of New Hampshire, basically, and is focusing on Iowa as kind of a last ditch effort to kind of restart her political fortune. So once again, I think Andrew Cuomo is happy being governor of the state of New York. I think he kind of likes the bully pulpit that he has to kind of opine on national issues without actually, you know, dirtying his hands by, you know, having to go to Iowa and eat, pancakes at breakfast in Des Moines. So
let's talk about stuff, Jesse McKinley of The New York Times. Let's talk about stuff, meaning he keeps announcing major substantive changes in New York State. Perhaps you could review some of that with us now.
Well, this is kind of an annual practice whereby legislative action is taken during the legislative session, which ends in June, and then periodically he will roll out a signing ceremony and stuff like this. But, you know, one of the things that I won't go through all the legislative stuff that he signed because, you know, in part that's his action, but in part it's the legislature's action. But one thing that he has been very active in throughout his entire two plus terms as governor is the infrastructure stuff. And, you know, last week he went to LaGuardia Airport and opened up one of the kind of renovated terminals there. He has, you know, kind of been jumping around the state in recent weeks, you know, handing out money for various projects. Yesterday, Tuesday, he was in Schenectady handing out $10 million there. So these are kind of very easy, photo op friendly, off kind of season kind of things that he can do. One thing he has not been really doing is making a lot of news otherwise, either for good or for bad. There hasn't been nary a hint of what he actually plans to do in the 2020 legislative session. Some people are talking big about, you know, vaping. That is certainly a critical issue of public health import. But in terms of giant, you know, big policy things that he might be pushing for, there are not a great deal of signals as to what that 2020 agenda will look like. I think, you know, legalizing marijuana might be a part of that. Some continued criminal justice reforms, you know, et cetera. But there has, you know, now in year 10 of the Cuomo administration, there is going to be a question as to what else needs to be done. And as of yet, we don't really have a clue.
Does he have an upstate problem that continues to plague him? You say he goes to Schenectady, gives him $10 million. We know that there are still signs up all over New York State decrying what I consider to be his major achievement, which is gun control. Do you think that there's any way he can become more popular upstate?
Simple answer, no. I mean, I think that there are pockets. Obviously, upstate New York is fascinating because it is a kind of a sea of red, meaning Republican territory, with very vibrant islands of blue, which tend to be the urban areas, you know, places like Utica and Syracuse and Rochester and Buffalo, which are very solid Democratic cities. In which he does have support, in which there are Democratic mayors and Democratic legislators. A lot of upstate New York is obviously Republican territory, and they are people that care about the SAFE Act, as you mentioned, and feel like it's a impingement on their Second Amendment rights. And I don't think that Andrew Cuomo handing out money to these projects is necessarily going to change anyone's mind up there, because you're not dealing necessarily with an economic issue. You're dealing with social issues. You're dealing with culture war issues, questions of gun rights and abortion and things like that, on which people have very strong, emotionally driven opinions, which are not easily changed by rhetoric. So he can hand out as many small buckets of money up there, and it's not going to change anybody's mind. And then, of course, having just said that, I will now contradict myself in that the other problem for him upstate continues to be an economic one, right? That a lot of these cities, a lot of these regions have suffered decades of either, population decline or stagnation. He's made a big deal of saying that young people are coming back to these areas. You know, I think that in some places that's true, but in a lot of places that's not. And even in terms of economic development, certainly the nation and the state has had this enormous 11-year-long recovery, which has certainly helped bring jobs back to these places. but you'd be hard-pressed to say that any of these places are Silicon Valley or any of these places are really booming in a way that they might have boomed under DeWitt Clinton and the Erie Canal. You know, these are not robust economic recoveries. These are kind of very moderate economic gains, perhaps. And once again, those are not things that that change people's political opinions very quickly.
So Jesse McKinley of the New York Times, I guess I got to ask you this. The state Senate is now blue. We have a gerrymander or a redistricting, for want of a better word, coming up. Can the Democrats hold on to the state Senate and draw the lines the way they want to?
And once again, I'll give you a simple answer to that. I think yes. You know, I think if you talk to Democratic strategists who watch the Senate, not only do they think that they are going to hold the Senate, but they think they're going to build on the Senate next year. And I think that even, you know, one curious thing, if you looked at the party enrollment, which was posted on November 1st, one thing that jumped out to me about that was that the Democrats had gained 100,000 voters in the state of New York just over the last 7 months. And Republicans had picked up like 9,000, which is not much. I think this state gets bluer and bluer and bluer. I think that there is a good chance that the Senate Dems could pick up 1, 2, 3 seats in the 2020 cycle. You know, there's a seat in Western New York that Bob Antonacci, who was only elected to the Senate last year, looks like he's going to vacate because he's going to go to the Supreme Court of the state, and that could very well be a Democratic pickup. I think the Republicans, because of Trump's unpopularity in the state, which cannot be understated, is going to, I think the Republican Senate is going to be playing defense. And even, you know, some of those districts on Long Island that the Democrats picked up in 2018, I think they'll probably hold and could conceivably maybe pick up another one. If you're a Republican in the state of New York, it's kind of grin and bear it time right now. You just have to kind of get through, I think, the 2020 cycle and hope you're not going to lose any more seats, and then try to figure out a way to overcome what will be a pretty sizable Democratic majority, potentially even a supermajority in the state Senate, and kind of chip away at that. You know, Nick Langworthy, who's the new head of the New York GOP, has said, you know, we're going to do this. We've got a strategy, et cetera, et al. But once again, I don't think the political map looks great for them next year.
But a gerrymander is a gerrymander. And even if it's a fair gerrymander, and even if the courts do it, and the Democrats get a fair break in the state Senate districts, it's got to help them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's predicting that there won't be any Republicans in the Senate, because a lot of these districts, as you point out, are safe red territory. We saw that yesterday on Election Day in Western New York in the 57th, where George Borrello, who's the Chautauqua County Executive, won that race handily over his 22-year-old challenger, Austin Morgan, who was a undergraduate at Cornell. When he started to run that campaign, I think he ran a spirited campaign, but he was just outgunned by the sheer number of Republicans in that district. So, I don't think anyone thinks the 57th is gerrymandered, but there are certainly wide swaths, as I was mentioning before, of safe Republican territory where there will continue to be representatives from that party.
Well, you know, Donald Trump has announced he's going south. Some people think because he wants to save some money on his taxes. So he says because he hasn't been treated well here in New York State. But there is a problem, right, of an exodus from New York for people who think it's too highly taxed.
Well, that's an old story. You know, the people moving to Florida has been happening ever since people discovered how nice and warm it is in Florida and how cold it can be in upstate New York this time of year for the next 6 months upcoming. Certainly population migration has been a problem for New York for decades. The New York City effect, however, mitigates that. You know, people continue to move to New York City, people can not only from around the world, but from around the United States, which kind of, you know, keeps New York's population kind of inching up. But, you can't do anything about the weather. Cuomo has said that he, has cut taxes, but, you know, at the end of the day, the property taxes are never going to be low enough for people who are not going to pay income tax in a place like Texas or Florida. It kind of seems like an intractable problem. Now, as to whether or not the president wanted to move south because he thought the taxes were going to be a better deal, or if he thought that somehow that was going to help him avoid scrutiny from New York State prosecutors.
Or win Florida.
Well, I think he won Florida already, so...
No, I mean the next time.
Oh, yeah. 20, yeah. Yeah, maybe that helps. Who knows? You know, Florida is Florida, and it continues to boggle, I think, national political consultants who somehow think that Democrats were going to win it, and then they never seem to do that in at least recent cycles. So... We'll see how much time the president spends in Mar-a-Lago. I think he kind of likes Trump Tower, so we'll see how much he commutes back and forth. There are planes that go back and forth all the time. So,
I remember when Rudy Giuliani went down there, thought he'd win the presidency on the back of Florida because they loved me down there, and they didn't.
No. Rudy Giuliani did not become president, nor does it seem like he's going to be president anytime soon.
There is at least one Republican who decided that he would make headlines the usual way by dividing up New York State into three states and having three different governors. But, of course, that's just the usual malarkey, right?
I don't think that's happening anytime soon, but boy, would that be fun to cover. I mean, one governor is fun enough. Can you imagine three? This would be, it would just be like a three-ring circus. It would be so much fun.
So there is some discussion as to whether Andrew Cuomo should have a new lieutenant governor. What do you think?
I think Kathy Hochul has done an admirable job in a position that is often thankless. There are only so many ribbon cuttings you can do before I think ennui sets in. So Kathy has certainly been mentioned as a possible congressional candidate out there in Western New York, particularly now with Chris Collins going away to the big house. I think that Kathy has probably bigger political ambition. Her husband was a prominent prosecutor out there. I think her reputation is pretty solid. I would not be surprised if at some point she decides to find a different job because she needs a challenge. She had been a member of Congress before losing out there, so perhaps she has other plans. I don't think the governor wants to get rid of her. I think he thinks that she does a good job as well.
Our guest has been Jesse McKinley of the New York Times. Jesse, you're doing a terrific job. I want to compliment you. Before I open my eyes, I read whatever you've written in the Times. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely.